Welcome to Art of the Christian Ninja, a podcast dedicated to helping you find the tools and inspiration you need to pursue a deeper, consistent, and more meaningful relationship with God. To learn more, visit the blog at artofthechristianninja.com. And now, here's your host, husband, father, pastor, author, and Christian ninja, Alan Deschanel.
Today we continue a series exploring a conversation that the Old Testament prophet Habakkuk had with God during a time of trouble in his nation. Today's message comes from a section called The Woes Against the Chaldeans, which confronts sin in no uncertain terms. In this passage today, we're going to talk about the woe against those with a false sense of security. Open with me to Luke chapter 12. Verses 13 to 34, and let's begin today by reading the parable of the rich fool. I apologize to anybody who's not quite caught up with what we've been doing here. We've been going through the book of Habakkuk. I normally give a survey of what we've done, but I wanted to get right into this one today to spend some more time in it. So you can go to the website, my website, and download the rest of the series if you'd like to catch up. But let's start in Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 34. The parable of the rich fool. Someone in the crowd said to him, that's Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge and arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them a parable, saying, "The land of a rich man produced plentifully, and he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops.' And he said, 'I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." The section begins with someone in the crowd running up and yelling out to Jesus to tell his brother to give him a share of his father's inheritance. Maybe he's been ripped off. Maybe he's being greedy. We don't know. But Jesus' answer has nothing to do with the inheritance. Instead, and as usual, Jesus goes straight to the problem in verse 15. He says, "Take care and be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." So as usual, Jesus flies past the presenting problem and gets to the heart of the issue, which is covetousness. Covetousness is simply the desire to have something for yourself that is currently possessed by someone else so that they can't have it anymore. You get that? Covetousness is the desire to have something for yourself that someone else has, so they can't have it anymore. It's not the same as jealousy. It means you want that, you don't want them to have it. You want it. Okay? It could be something they own. It could be their social status. It could be their financial position. It could be the way that their life works out right now. It could be their wife. It could be their husband. It could be anything else that they have and you don't. And you want it so badly that you wish you had it and they didn't. That's covetousness. Jesus gets past the presenting problem, the issue with the inheritance, and goes straight to the actual problem. The person is breaking the 10th commandment, "Thou shalt not covet." His problem wasn't the lack of inheritance. That wasn't the issue. The problem wasn't the fact that he wasn't getting what he was supposed to get. It had shown that he had a sin problem. He had a heart problem. He wanted something that someone else had, and it was causing trouble for him and everyone else around him. His family was now fractured. His relationships were now strained. He was in a state of anger, a state of jealousy, a state of covetousness, because he wanted what his brother had. Think of it this way. It had gotten so bad In his mind, he was so messed up by this that he was willing to run up to Jesus, interrupt him right in the middle of his talk, and shout out, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Yelling at Jesus. There's more going on than just a simple dispute over a will. There's some massive personal, relational, spiritual problems just in that one statement. Have you ever lived through a will division? You probably have. I know we've got some people here that are working through some stuff right now. There's a lot going on. You have a lot of emotions built up. We went through a bad one in my family at one point, and it created a fracture between brother and sister that ended up being, right now I think it's 30 years, 35 years, and they were trying to run each other off the road at one point. It got bad. It's not the will. It's not the inheritance. It's the heart, right? Do we know that? All right, so let's tie this together. First, we have a man running up with the presenting problem of an inheritance squabble. This is usually where it starts, right? Just kind of an introduction. This is my problem. Someone's not being fair to me. And Jesus diagnoses it right away as a spiritual problem. Actually, it's not the inheritance, isn't it? You have a spiritual problem. Something's wrong with you. No, it's my brother. No, there's something wrong with you. Then Jesus tells a story of a wealthy farmer who reaps a great crop and decides to use the proceeds to buy himself comfort and hedonism. In that story, Jesus says God himself confronts this man with a very powerful word, and it is the word fool. Why was this man in the story foolish? Both the covetous man and the rich fool had the same problem. Greed. Their priorities were out of whack. It was causing them to miss the big picture. They thought life consisted of the abundance of possessions, as Jesus says later, which is foolish. What good would that inheritance, what good would that bigger barn do if they came face to face with God? Your soul is being taken tonight. What's your bigger barn going to do for you? What's the inheritance going to do for you? You have a sin problem. Have you dealt with that yet? See why it's a bigger deal? Why you're a fool? Okay. That's what we're talking about today. The abundance of possessions wouldn't be a blessing to them. It would actually be a testimony against them. It would be evidence in a court trial and testimony against them because it showed how big their disconnect was from God. The bigger their pile grew, the less they needed to trust God. The more they accumulated, the greedier they became. And finally, as greed took over their heart, they would declare, "Everything is mine and I can do with it whatever I wish. I choose not to share, eat, drink, and be merry. That's what it's for. I will use my stuff for my pleasure." That's the end of the road. Or is it? And so Jesus warns through his teaching and warns through his story. Remember, he goes from you to them, telling them, everyone who's listening, be careful how you view the things of this world. He seems to say, don't be like this fool who just came running up and interrupted me. Or don't be like the fool in the story. Instead of worrying so much about the things you accumulate during this short time on the planet, make sure you are right with God. Make sure your eternity is secure. Now, if you're following along in your Bible, there's probably a chapter division. Okay? Who has a chapter division after? Who's not following along in their Bible at all? You should bring your Bible to church, and then you should follow along with it as we go through and make notes along the side. Okay? Do that. All right. There's probably a chapter division in there, unless you got one of those new fandangled Bibles that gets rid of all the chapter divisions and whatnot, but most of us don't. After verse 20, as though this next section is a new section of Scripture, a new story than one that we just read. In my Bible, there's a big space in there, and then it says, do not be anxious, and seems to be starting a whole new thought. That's the general idea. But I want you to notice the very first word that Jesus says. What does he say next? Therefore. And as every good Bible exegesis person will tell you, every time you see a therefore, you have to ask what it's therefore. Ha ha, clever. Okay. It means whatever came before, the interruption by the person with the inheritance problem and the parable of the rich fool are directly tied to that which is coming after. So let's read that. And he said to his disciples, therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. For life is more than food, and the body more than clothing. Consider the ravens. They neither sow nor reap. They neither have storehouse nor barn, yet God feeds them. Of how much more value are you than the birds? And which of you, by being anxious, can add a single hour to his span of life? If then you're not able to do as small a thing as that, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin. Yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. But if God so clothes the grass, which is alive in the field today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, how much more will he clothe you, O you of little faith? And do not seek what you are to eat and what you are to drink, nor be worried. For the nations of the world seek after these things, and your Father knows you need them. Instead, seek his kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where there no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus says, therefore. And then he starts digging deep into the root of the problem that was just presented to him. Why was the covetous man so desirous of his inheritance? What got him so worked up? Why was the rich fool so focused on keeping all that wealth to himself and not using it to bless others as God intended? Jesus gives the answer over and over and over and over. Did you catch it? Anxiety. Which is another word for worry, which is another word for fear. He uses the word anxious over and over and over. And then in verse 29, he uses the word worry. And then in 32, he changes it to fear. Almost like falling downstairs. Jesus ties anxiety and worry and fear together and relates it directly to the problem of greed and covetousness. Why did the man want the inheritance? Why did the rich fool want bigger barns? They were worried they wouldn't have enough. The man's anxiety over money caused him to be covetous of his brother who had more, and that anxiety drove him to argue with his brother, and that drove him to finally make a public scene in front of Jesus and all of his followers. He got very worked up about not having what he thought he should have because he was worried he wasn't going to have enough. Now, you're probably thinking, weren't we in Habakkuk at one point? Yes. Turn with me to Habakkuk chapter 2, verses 9 to 11. We're going to get into the second woe to the Chaldeans. And I want you to listen to how similar this woe is to what Jesus has been talking about. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house, to set his nest on high, to be safe from the reach of harm. You have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. You have forfeited your life, for the stone will cry out from the wall and the beam from the woodwork respond. Again, as June pointed out, this is poetry. So what does it mean? The first woe, which we talked about last week, was against Chaldea's greed. This woe is against their sense of self-security. I want to take it apart a bit, because the self-security issue is extremely important. And it ties exactly to what Jesus has been saying. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house. That could easily be restated. Woe to him who gathers an abundance of possessions without regard to being rich towards God. Does that kind of sound the same? Where do you get evil possessions? Evil gain is merely possessions that are gained in a way that God doesn't authorize. Simple as that. Woe to him who gets evil gain for his house. Same as piling up abundance of possessions without regarding God. Same deal. The next part is to set his nest on high. The word to tells us the reason that they were getting their evil gain, which was to take their nest or their home or their nation and set it on high where they would be safe from the reach of harm. Sounds like anxiety, doesn't it? Want to learn something neat? Everybody say yes, because I'm going to do it anyway. It's in the script. All right. The Greek word for worry that Jesus used in Luke 12 is the word meteorazomai, which is the root word where we get our word meteor. Okay. It's a compound word from meta, meaning beyond, and air, meaning
air.
Beyond the air. Okay. It literally means something that is high in the air, something that's above the air, a thing that is high up. Meteor. Okay? Jesus says, do not worry. And the word picture is of a person who is free falling because they are high up in the air. They're scared. They're holding on to nothing. There's no ground to stand on. And they are absolutely in a free fall. Okay? What phrase does Habakkuk use to describe what the Chaldeans are trying to do? Set their nest on high. Get higher. Place their nest near the heavens. It could be literally translated. Place their nest in the heavens. In their pride, they wanted to take their nest, their home, their nation, and make it as high as possible, to set it in the heavens where they'd be above everyone and safe forever. But God says, you're being a fool. The consequences of having your home that high up, to try to build up your pile, to go that high in the sky, is extremely dire. You're not more safe. These people were driven by greed and by anxiety. Their worry and their fear, they wanted to pile up abundance of possessions so they could be safe. Their anxiety, their desire for self-security drove them outside of their own borders. Chaldea wasn't enough. Babylon wasn't enough. They needed to go out and get more, take more, be bigger, be stronger, be safer. By force, taking what other nations had so they could be safe. So they could be up. So they could be beyond reach. But remember what a woe is. A woe is a pronouncement of judgment against a self-satisfied person who doesn't even realize they're in danger. Woe to you means you think you're okay, but you're very, very not. They think they're doing fine, and yet their fate has already been sealed. Habakkuk pronounces woe to them because, and he says this, because you have devised shame for your house by cutting off many peoples. You forfeited your life. So in their worry, in their desperation for self-sufficiency, to get themselves nice and high up where everything is safe and everything is fine, they are like the man who wanted his inheritance. They've actually hurt themselves. Instead of gaining more security, they're in a free fall of worry and they're cutting themselves off from other people. You ever fall off something? What's the first thing you do? You just flail, right? Trying to find any kind of ground. That's the picture that we're seeing of the Chaldeans. That's a picture we're seeing of the man with the inheritance issue, the covetous issue. He's just flailing, and everyone around him is getting beat up. They're in a free fall, and they're cutting themselves off from other people. Their covetous and greedy hearts tell them that God's not going to provide for them, and it says, don't be a good neighbor. Build your security in other ways. Now, a good neighbor, a smart, wise, intelligent person, builds allies, right? Builds good neighbors. I'll take care of you, you take care of me. That's what a wise person does. Their covetous and greedy hearts said, you know what? God's not going to do it. Your neighbors aren't going to do it. Don't use friendship. Don't use cooperation. Instead, tell God to get lost and go pillage, rob, and overthrow your neighbors. Drive away anyone who could be friends with you, because then you'll be safe. They weren't secure in the heavens. They were in a free fall of anxiety, and their life was nothing but air. They'd driven everyone out from around them because of their fear and their anxiety and their covetousness. The man that came up to Jesus, that Jesus had talked to, almost without a doubt, had ruined his relationship with his brother, ruin his relationship with his family and his friends and probably his neighbors too. As covetousness and greed started taking over his heart, his relationship with God declined, and all he could think about was getting what was his, getting his money, being secure. To seal the deal, Satan played the fear card. You probably had this one too. What if you don't get your fair share? What if you don't get enough? What if something happens? Where's your security? Where's your nest egg? Who's going to keep you safe? What's going to keep you safe? You could starve. You could be out on the street. You could be cold. You could be naked. You need to get that inheritance. This is about safety. This is security. This could be in your family. You could be starving in the streets. But ironically, as Habakkuk's woe says, all of their hoarding, all of their abundance of possessions at the cost of the people around them didn't bring them safety. In fact, he says, in doing so, you have forfeited your life. That's the woe. They thought they were safe, but they weren't. All their security, at the cost of everyone around them, was an illusion. And worse, in the same way as we read in Jesus' story, their possessions were actually working against them because they became the very thing that God used as testimony against them because it was a symbol of their disconnect from God. That's what the last line says. For the stone will cry out from the wall and the beam from the woodwork respond. It's testifying against them. All these lands you've conquered, all these houses you've taken over, all the things that you have that you gained by force because you were terrified that you wouldn't have enough, it's all testifying against you. The stone is crying out from the wall against you. The woe against Chaldean security is the same message Jesus gives in the Gospel of Luke. Take care, be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. It's the same woe. So what does that mean for us today? It occurred to me this week that the series was coming on this messages of the woes to the Chaldeans was coming at a very appropriate time in the Christian calendar. I kind of skipped over it. I normally hit it, but we've been stuck in Habakkuk, and so I kind of skipped over it. But we're in the time of Lent right now. These woes, they revolve around pride and greed and addiction and covetousness and just nom, 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 more, which are all summed up in Jesus' warning to get our hearts right with wealth. And it's coming during the Lent season, which is historically when Christians purposefully remove things from their life so they can concentrate on spiritual things. Isn't that interesting? I didn't plan that. This problem with being possessed by our possessions is very common. The church fathers knew that was going to be a problem forever. And so they set aside a time, the season of Lent, which is 40 days of fasting before Easter, so we can take some time to evaluate the things in our life that are pulling us away from God. Jesus talked more about wealth and money and possessions than anything else. He knew it was going to be a problem for us. It was a problem for Adam and Eve. Way too many apples in the garden, right? We just sang Amazing Grace a couple days ago at Jennifer's memorial. And in it, the song says, through many dangers, toils, and snares, I have already come, right? The world's full of dangers and toils and snares. So it's extremely tempting for us to take our eyes off God and to put it on the dangers, toils, and snares and start to believe that we need to build our own security. It's easy to start to think that the best thing in the world is to accumulate possessions and push people away. My comfort for me, get out of my life. I need less people, more things.
accumulating a bunch of possessions, get what we can, keep it for ourselves, then we'll be secure.
Yeah, okay, we'll share a little of the extra. We're Christians after all. If we got some extra, we'll throw it out there, right?
But not at the expense of our security, because that's crazy. Who would do that? Lent forces us to reevaluate our relationships with wealth and possessions. Go back to the words in Luke 12 and see how Jesus takes apart every single one of our anxieties and our security. He gets these big, sweeping statements, okay? Verse 22, he addresses our anxiety about basic needs. Therefore, I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body, what you will put on. Okay, that pretty much covers the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the bottom end, right? Safety, food, clothing. Jesus says, don't spend so much effort worrying about this, safety, food, and clothing, for two good reasons. One, life is about way more than food. And two, because God already knows what you need. We still get worried though, right? And so we gather more money and we gather more clothes and we get the closet and we get the savings account and we get the retirement savings and the IRAs and the GICs and more wage increases and then more strikes so we can get more wage increases and more pension payments, et cetera, et cetera. What is the biggest concern that Canadians have when we're voting for a government? It's the economy, right? Everybody's talking about the economy. Well, it's okay for us, and think about this, just let this settle in your brains for a little bit. It is fine for us to let the government kill the babies, murder the sick, teach our kids to be sexual deviants, ignore the staggering suicide and addiction rates, kill the environment, attack marriage, and outlaw religion, because all we care about is how much money are they going to give me and will I have a job? Jesus implores us to realize life is about so much more than the economy
in our homes or in our country. Next, he addresses all these anxieties we give ourselves about trying to cheat death. And which of you being anxious can add a single hour to his span of life? All your fussing and complaining and fighting and worry, is it actually going to add an hour to your life or anyone else's? That's an easy question. Do you know when you're going to die? You could have an aneurysm right now. Drop dead in this right here. You get hit by a bus crossing the street. You have no idea. It doesn't stop us from worrying, though, does it? It doesn't stop us from focusing on the specter of death that is coming for all of us. We need more vitamins and more diets and more fads, more trips to the doctor, more trips to the chiropractor, more trips to the naturopath, more locks on the doors, more security systems, more borders, more police, more military, more anything we can have so we can feel like we've taken a little bit of control to ward off death for yet a little while more. That anxiety will destroy your soul. It drives us to do things that destroy our relationships with those around us, destroy our relationship with God and everyone else. It turns us into covetous people who want what others have because we think they're safer than us. They're so much healthier. Why can't I be like that? They seem to have so much better life. They're so much safer. Why can't I live there, have that, do that? I wish I could just be like them. Why did they get it and I don't? And then bitterness sets in and jealousy sets in and we become the Chaldeans who, instead of partnering with others in sacrificial relationships where we meet each other's needs, Acts chapter 2, we see others as competitors who need to be vanquished or, better, eliminated so we can take what they have. Have you ever hated someone simply because they had something you felt you needed or deserved? Man, that person, they get everything so easy. They did nothing to deserve it. I don't even want to talk to them. I can't even be in the same room as them. Every time they talk, all I hear is, I'm better than you, I'm richer than you, I'm safer than you, I have better things than you.
You ever hate someone because of what they have? You ever wish someone to be gone, dead, or fired so you can have what they possess? Man, I wish they'd just die. Then I could have their stuff. I wish they would move. Then I could have their house. I wish they'd move. I wish they'd get fired. Then I get their job. We just downsize the right amount of people. Then I could have a better job and more income. That's anxiety. That's greed driving you to sin. And it destroys relationships with you and God. But then Jesus goes even deeper. The man showed up with an inheritance problem. Jesus says, no, you have a covetousness problem. And then he turns to the crowd and he goes deeper than even covetousness. The real issue isn't covetousness. The real issue isn't even anxiety. The real issue is faith. Coupled with the statements about anxiety is the question of faith. Jesus says, don't be anxious about life or food or clothing. And then he says, consider the ravens, consider the lilies. Of how much more value are you than the birds or the grass? That's a question. And he expects an answer. It's not rhetorical. He expects an answer. Do you believe that God finds you more valuable than a bird or a flower? Yes or no? If the answer is no, God cares more about birds and flowers than he does me, then you'd better get to work building your nest and making it high, because you have no sense of security. Fill it with stuff, because God's not going to take care of you. He's worried about the birds. He's worried about the people in Syria. He's worried about the grass. He's worried about the future. He's worried about eventually figuring stuff out. You know, sometimes he steps in, but he's mostly worried about other people, not me. I need to take care of myself. Do you believe God cares more about the grass than you? Does your life reflect it? If the answer is yes, God cares way more about me than the birds, then you need to show it by living his way. The birds do what they're told, and then God arranges the world to care for them. The flowers open their leaves and accept God's rain and God's sun whenever he deems it fit to give it to them. Do you believe that God can and will do the same for you? Do you believe that God is caring enough that you will get what you need when you need it, or do you have to go get it yourself? Evil game. That's a faith question. Your anxiety dissipates your faith in God's care. If God doesn't care about you, you're in trouble. If God does care, then what do you need to be afraid of? In verse 32, it says, fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. That's great. I love that. That's Jesus. You know, Jesus calls them and he calls us his little flock. And then he reminds us that God's plan isn't just to help them with daily living and daily bread. And it's not just about living in this world or whatever. He plans to give us the entirety of his kingdom to enjoy. God's not a miser giving out one little thing. He's his plan. You can have the whole thing. Have the kingdom. Does that not remind you of Psalm 23? The Lord is my shepherd. What did Jesus say? Fear not, little flock. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not. What does that mean? He's going to give me what I need. If he's the shepherd, I get what I need. If I'm the shepherd, I got to get it myself. Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He prepares the table before me in the presence of my enemies. He anoints my head with oil. I know there's some people here that actually have cattle.
How good are they at feeding and taking care of themselves and making sure that they go gather? If you decided one day, you're like, you know what? I don't care anymore. Take care of yourself. How long do they last?
Are you part of Jesus' little flock or not? Are you saved?
Are you a Jesus person? Is he your Lord? Is he your Savior? Are you part of his little flock? If you are, then do you trust the shepherd to take care of you? If you're not, you're screwed. Because you're his enemy. And he will take everything from you and give it to his little flock.
But do you trust the shepherd? So let me close with this. Woe to those who find their security in themselves, seeking evil gain for their house, trying to set their nest on high so they could be safe, because in doing so, you have forfeited your life and your soul. If you believe you can remove your anxiety through the abundance of your possessions, you are in real trouble. And God calls you a fool. I'm going to read that again. Woe to those who find their security in themselves, seeking evil gain for their house, trying to set their nest on high where they can be safe, because in doing so, you have forfeited your life and your soul. If you believe that you can remove your anxiety through the abundance of your possessions, you are in real trouble. God calls you a fool.
And so my encouragement to you today and the application for today is something some of you don't want to hear, but I'm going to read it anyway. Verses 33 to 34. Why don't you guys read it? Give me that first line. Very good. That's really hard. I mean, I could probably spend hours trying to exegete that so you guys can understand it, right? Hard to grasp that one.
Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in heaven that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. Do you realize that's talking about anxiety? What are we worried about, right? Worried about growing old and things failing and thieves approaching and moths destroying. Like, you want to get rid of your anxiety, put your treasure somewhere else. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be. Now, just to allay some of your fears, no, this doesn't mean sell everything you have. What it means is evaluate in your heart for the things in your life that are separating you from God. What possesses you that you need to get rid of? So there's a bunch of questions I want you to ask yourself.
Okay?
What do you have that is simply there to give you security? What do you have that you just have because it's your security? And if it's gone, you feel like the world's out of control. If you don't have that, you're in trouble. What do you have that used resources that God gave you to care for someone else? Is there someone out there hurting because you decided you wanted something else in your bigger barn? That's a good question. Is there someone else out there hurting because you decided you wanted more? Enough wasn't enough. You wanted more, so you took it from them. God gave it to you. And he said, okay, I need you to take this and go help that person. And you said, nope, mine. I'm going to put it in my barn. Do you know someone that's legitimately needy, but you chose not to help because you were afraid God wouldn't provide for you? Jesus isn't asking you to sell everything you have and live in a cardboard box. He's telling you to hold what you have in loose hands, not tied to earthly things. He says that we need to evaluate what we have to see if we're being greedy or being covetous, or if we have our security in our possessions rather than God. So, does God have everything you have? Or is some of it yours and yours alone? Where's your treasure? Where's your heart? And finally, would you choose Jesus if it meant living in poverty?
Thank you for listening to Art of the Christian Ninja with your host, Alan Deschanel. If you have any questions, you can contact Alan by clicking on the About Me button on his blog at artofthechristianninja.com. We hope you appreciate these podcasts, and if you do, please take the time to share them with your friends, rate them in iTunes, and like them on Facebook. And don't forget to check out the other podcast Alan does with his friends called Carnivore Theology, where they discuss contemporary issues with humor and biblical insight.